My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour...
On July 11th, 2021, in case we replay the show.
Yes, and it's only 107, so we're actually doing pretty good for...
We'll replay it in the winter when we're not sweaty.
For high noon.
Yeah.
So our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape is everything John Deere. You need tractors, implements, parts, service. Go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. They also have, they've still got some Honda generators in stock. You might want to go by and grab one while they last because apparently...
Get your PG&E email.
Yeah, I guess Honda's having like a shortage in California, so a little difficult to get right now. So go by and get them while they last. And also steel products. If you get the hankering to go out and do a little yard work, which you probably want to do about 3 in the morning, go by and see them. They got a lot of steel products in stock, and they should be able to fix you up.
Ta-da.
There you go.
Okay. So our guest today...
Yes.
...is Peter Friedman.
Peter Friedman.
Yes. And you can always find everything about the show at wethepeopleradio.us. Sometimes I let Bill say the .us.
Yeah, but sometimes I'm busy and I can only do one thing at a time, so forgive me for that.
Sometimes Bill tied up in his one thing.
And my one thing.
He's doing his one thing. And if you haven't seen City Slickers, you don't know what that means, but that's if you looked up, you probably could YouTube Curly One Thing, because Curly, that was his thing. One thing. Did you ever find out at the end of the movie what the one thing was? I don't remember that.
I don't think so.
Huh. No. I just stole the line and applied it to Bill and forgot about all the rest of it, except for the coffee grinder scene, you know, where he sets causes a stampede. Okay, I remember that part. So, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. I know you'll find that shocking. We're going to talk about the CIA today.
Yay!
Yeah.
Always fun.
Yeah, the CIA. It turns out they're not just an agency; they're prophets.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're prophets. Oh. And you know, you will find out why. And their prophecy actually is on the webpage for today with our guest Peter Friedman. Mr. Friedman has a really, really wide and varied background, and we have had him on. I checked this out last night. First time he was on with us was October 2012. That was like, I don't know, right after we started a long time ago. We've done a bunch of stuff on Islam with him. And so if you'd like some really good information about what's going on there, that is always timeless. Please go back and look at that. We've also done some terrific shows with him on home defense because he is an NRA instructor and has been for a really long time. I've got his whole bio on there. He's got lots of firearms credentials. We did a show. If you really need a laugh, my time in the FBI, that was a really worthwhile show to listen to.
That was a classic.
And I don't want to wreck it for you, but a gun does fall in the toilet, and Mr. Friedman didn't do it. So you can guess who might have, but you'll have to listen to the show just to confirm that it was the FBI who dropped their gun in the toilet. And he's just been studying and lecturing, and he always has these new ideas. He sent me this article, and I thought, all right, we're not missing this. Very timely. So it's an unclassified report, but I don't want to blow what it's about because I don't know how he wants to do it. So, Mr. Friedman, are you...
I am here.
You're on the hostage phone line? We should probably have a safe word.
But we're glad to have you.
Thanks for coming back
with
us.
Well, I'm very pleased to be had. So I'm rooting around. I must have too much time on my hands anyway. I'm rooting around and trying to discover where all of this stuff started. Okay, all of these life science, bioscience, experimentation, and stuff like that. Where did all this come from? And in doing so, I came up with what was originally a classified report by the CIA Directorate of Intelligence, which has since been unclassified, which kind of surprises me because, you know, if I were them, I would want to keep this classified. But then nobody ever goes to prison.
That's true.
I wonder when the Durham report will be issued. So
don't hold your breath on that one.
Oh, no, I'll be dead in an hour. So can't hold my breath that long. So looking at this, it becomes very interesting because it's entitled The Darker Bioweapons Future. So something occurred way back when, 25 years ago or so, that sparked this interest in the darker bioweapons future. Now, I think it may have had something to do, and I've seen some dots that I've connected between Saddam Hussein and his bioweapons research and everything. Of course, we gave a lot of that research to him during the Iran-Iraq War back in the 80s. So if you start to connect some of these dots, a lot of stuff came out of our weapons lab at Fort Detrick in Maryland, and when they shut that down, it actually was offloaded to the research department, biomedical research department of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Now, that's been in the news recently, which kind of also sparked my interest because there was a lot of emails that went back and forth that have now surfaced between North Carolina, University of North Carolina research, Fauci, Peter Daszak, who is the guy who runs the EcoHealth Alliance, who laundered the money from the NIH and Fauci going to the Wuhan lab. So all of this is really fascinating, okay? It's kind of like, why would our government during World War II have cooperated with Hitler and IG Farben manufacturing Zyklon B gas for the gas chambers? You know, it has that feeling to it. So we're looking at this CIA report, and I have not seen this come up anywhere by anybody. But let me read some stuff here off of this report. And again, it is in a PDF version on your website. It's also there pictorially. But it starts off with a panel of life science experts convened for the Strategic Assessments Group by the National Academy of Sciences, which is part of the National Institutes of Health, of course, concluded that advances in biotechnology, coupled with the difficulty in detecting nefarious biological activity, have the potential to create a much more dangerous biological warfare threat. Now, what's fascinating to me is that this report was issued on November 3rd, 2003. That's 18 years ago. So when you read the rest of this, this is a roadmap for the Chinese at Wuhan. It says that traditional intelligence means for monitoring weapons of mass destruction development could prove inadequate to deal with the threat from these advanced biological weapons. So keep thinking of the Wuhan lab and all of this stuff with the original SARS, H1N1. This is all resulting from what was discovered and warned about 18 years ago. Detection of, reading further, third bullet point here, detection of related activities, particularly the development of novel bioengineered pathogens. That's COVID-19.
Oh, absolutely.
They have called it a novel virus. It is bioengineered, and it is certainly a pathogen. So detection of these related activities will depend increasingly on more specific human intelligence and will necessitate a closer and perhaps qualitatively different working relationship between the intelligence and biological sciences communities. So one has to ask themselves, while we're talking about COVID-19, what did the intelligence community in the United States know, and when did they know it? Okay, we go back to Senator Howard Baker. Okay, what did they know, and when did they know it? Moving down here in the document, the threat from advanced bioweapons. In the last several decades, now this is very interesting, remember this, this is written November 2003. So if you're talking about 20 years before, you're talking about what? 1973? 1983? And I'll get into that in a minute. So in the last several decades prior to 2003, the world has witnessed a knowledge explosion in the life sciences based on an understanding of genes and how they work. Now think of DNA. Think of all the law enforcement cold cases. And I've worked on a number of cold cases, you know, in my career, trying to figure out exactly what happened. And now, all of a sudden, where there is, in the last generation, where there has been DNA collected at a crime site, you see on the news all of the time how all of a sudden somebody who got away with it for 30 years, they've now been arrested and prosecuted because of the DNA explosion. So according to panel members, practical applications of this new and burgeoning knowledge base will accelerate dramatically and unpredictably. Okay? And they quote that in life sciences, we are now where information technology was in the 1960s. So in other words, here in the 1960s, you had the explosion of computers, fax machines. Jesus, I still have my original Brother fax machine using the hydrostatic paper. I figure one of these days it may be worth something. I still have my original Apple computer that had 64K in it. Wow. No hard drive. And you had to use, you go over to Radio Shack and you buy a $10 cassette tape recorder. Okay, and I'm sure anybody born in the last generation has no idea what I'm talking about. And you would buy programs, very short little programs on a cassette, and then you hook up the cassette recorder to the Apple, okay, and you would download that into the existing drive on Apple, and then you could play with it, but as soon as you shut off the machine, it would go away. You'd have to do it all over again. Okay.
Just some of the fun meat we used to have while we were cooking our food over a fire.
There you go. Yeah, your biofuel density. Okay. And then they go on to say the same science that may cure some of our worst diseases could be used to create the world's most frightening weapons. This is almost 20 years ago. Where are people going to prison?
Yeah.
Okay. Australian researchers, now I am very interested in the fact that this talks about Australia researchers, and ivermectin, which we'll discuss later on today, was created and developed in Australia. Then you see all of a sudden the Chinese and this lovely chairman, Xi Jinping, okay, personal friend of Joe Biden, has advocated maybe for the bombing of Australia. Did you see that 3 or 4 weeks ago?
No, I missed that one.
Oh yeah, his foreign minister came out in a press conference and said if Australia doesn't stop screwing with China, you know, they may consider bombing certain areas of Australia.
Oh,
what the?
And that made no headline. which is kind of interesting. Hold that thought, Mr. Friedman.
It was on.
Let's take on Tucker Carlson.
So
it's been some random thing. I'm sure CNN covered it because they're awesome at that. We're going to take a really swift break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And topple their regime. Those men in black with their mansion suitcases, where everything's on a need-to-know basis. Agents got that swagger. Everyone's so cloak and dagger. I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kind of wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on. Got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide pills, my classified dossier. Tapping the phones like, yeah. Shredding the files like, yeah. And then my rise to all the enemy's spies. I gotta neutralize today. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA. I've done a couple of crazy things that have almost gotten me dismissed. Like terminate some head of state who wasn't even on my list. Burn that microfilm, buddy, will you? I'd tell you why, but then I'd have to kill you. You need a quickie confession. We'll start a waterboarding session. No hurry on this South American dictator. I'll assassinate him later. That's when he walked right in my laser sights. And my silencer was on. And my silencer was on. And another target's gone. Yeah, we got our flag up all over the world. From Kazakhstan to Bombay. Paying the bribes like, yeah. Plugging the leaks like, yeah. Interrogating the scum of the earth. We'll break them by the break of day. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA.
What would we do without Weird Al?
Yeah.
We'd have to listen to the regular song. It's by that Cyrus person.
We'd have no fun at all.
We heard it at Disney World. We were on a boat, and all of a sudden they started, it was called Party in the USA. I'm like, what song is this?
Wait a minute,
this
she stole that from Weird Al.
Yeah, the words are all wrong. It wasn't funny or anything. Wrecked everything. So, Mr. Friedman, let's go back to the sadness at Australia. What the heck?
Okay, I love Dr. D'Amato. Okay. So, going back to the CIA report 18 years ago, okay, Australian researchers recently inadvertently showed that the virulence of mousepox virus can be significantly enhanced by the incorporation of a standard immunoregulator gene, in other words, something that can suppress your immune system. A technique that could be applied to other naturally occurring pathogens, such as anthrax or smallpox, greatly increasing their lethality. Okay, this is November 2003. Remember that Obama had to deal with H1N1, the swine flu, in 2009. 6 years later. Gee. I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, you keep going down here. It says a mild pathogen, okay, which essentially today in young people and stuff, COVID is, okay, there's a 99.8% recovery rate, a mild pathogen that when combined with its antidote becomes virulent. Designer bioweapon agents created to be antibiotic resistant or to evade an immune response. Weaponized gene therapy vectors that affect permanent change in the victim's genetic makeup, or a stealth virus which could lie dormant inside a victim for an extended period before being triggered. Okay. For example, one panelist cited the possibility of a stealth virus attack that could cripple a large portion of people in their 40s with severe arthritis, concealing its hostile origin and leaving a country with massive health and economic problems. This could have been written 6 months ago.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So now, let me go back to this one thing here. It says a mild pathogen that, when combined with its antidote, becomes virulent. Let me tell you about this good friend of mine. This guy, who is in his 50s, who I have known for a long time, especially through aviation stuff. So he comes down with COVID. This is about 4 months ago. He comes down with COVID, stays home, lots of fluids, you know, Tylenol, whatever it was, and throws it off. And then, because his wife is a virologist with a major HMO hospital chain, has a chat with him and talks him into taking the Pfizer vaccine.
Oops.
He gets deathly sick. We're talking deathly sick. So let's read this sentence again. A particularly insidious example would be a mild pathogen that, when combined with its antidote, the Pfizer vaccine, becomes virulent. This is a roadmap.
Wow. That does seem a little frightening.
It is. It's scary. This is an absolute roadmap that I think in the last 20 years or 18 years at least has been just followed bullet point by bullet point with the Chinese. The resulting diversity, reading further, the resulting diversity of new biowarfare agents could enable such a broad range of attack scenarios that it would be virtually impossible to anticipate and defend against. As a result, there could be a considerable lag time in developing effective biodefense measures. Oh, you mean the entire year of 2020?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, effective countermeasures, once developed, could be leveraged against a range of bioweapon agents, citing current research aimed at developing protocols for augmenting common elements of the body's response to disease rather than treating individual diseases. Now, the last time we talked about this, I was reading right off Moderna's website, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
And Moderna had a summary of how the mRNA vaccine works, and they specifically, in print, said this is biological software. Okay? So, we can read right back here, current research aimed at developing protocols for augmenting common elements. You there?
Yeah, somebody
sorry
just didn't
that.
Shut their phone off. And it wasn't me either. Not yet. So I'm scrambling.
Current research, 2003. Current research aimed at developing protocols for augmenting common elements of the body's response to disease, think mRNA, rather than treating individual diseases. So in other words, they plant the operating system into your cells, and then depending upon what biowarfare agent is prevailing at the time, they can now put an app into your body to work with the operating system, which is Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca, which nobody likes anywhere in the world now, okay, on an individual basis. Well, what are we trying to fight this year? Think of the seasonal flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
They never know what strain is going to be coming, and so if you take a flu shot, maybe it's got 50% efficacy to it. Maybe what's in that flu shot seasonally will handle whatever the coming flu happens to be, which people really don't know. Okay, so under implications for warning, the experts emphasize that because the processes, techniques, and equipment and know-how needed for advanced bioagent development are dual use. So both commercially and militarily. It will be extremely difficult to distinguish between legitimate biological research activities and production of advanced bioweapon agents. And just lastly here, in the interest of time, we go to the last bullet point. For the bioscience community at large, they need to aid the government by acting as a living sensor web. At international conferences and university labs, think of University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and through informal networks to identify and alert it to new technical advances with weaponization potential. Now, there are a number of informal networks that have sprung up in the last year and a half since COVID hit. They have all been censored. They have all been, and we're going to get into that in a few minutes, they have all been taken off the internet because they don't want the government, they do not want people to know what is going on with these informal networks. This is like Dr. Peter McCulloch. It's like the frontline COVID doctors and their website, the FLCCC.org. They don't want them to know that because if you know that and you start to research what has been going on, it is going to lead precisely to what we're discussing today. And that just throws a wrench into everything. It screws up the big pharma, who now is charging $3,000 for a dose of remdesivir. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But this is frightening as hell. It's amazing. This has been going on.
Yeah, the fact that it was 2012. Or 2003. I mean, from 2003 until 2021... This has been sitting. When was this declassified anyway? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I've filed a Freedom of Information Act request, and we'll see what I get back.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, how long was this available? I specifically like one of the points here. You're maybe going to hit that a little bit more later, but when it says other biologists have synthesized a key smallpox viral protein and shown its effectiveness in blocking critical aspects of the human immune response, it's like, well, I could totally see a great application for that. Never.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And right. I think COVID-19 was a trial run.
Yeah. And then they've got a nice polio one. And it's like, what the heck? I mean, these are the weird, immoral things that we hear from our guests on China. And they talk about how they're doing weirdo, you know, animal people experiments trying to make, trying to make male mice pregnant, stuff like that. You know, they're doing odd things that they want to use on people.
Sounds like Joseph Mengele.
Mm-hmm. It's true. In a sick way, I've laughed about this many times. I'm like, I bet Mengele's down there in hell trying to make a deal with the devil. It's like, send me back. My people are finally in charge.
He's probably a buddy of Saul Alinsky.
I think he's got a lot of friends. I mean, I think really, honestly, if Mengele has any kind of view into what's going on, I'm sure he'd look around and go, I wouldn't even be a pariah now. I could be a big shot like Fauci.
That's scary. Have you ever heard of Dr. Robert Malone?
No.
Dr. Robert Malone in 1989 was the actual inventor of mRNA vaccine technology.
Oh, surprise.
Dr. Robert Malone. Now, you ought to look him up. It's very interesting because Dr. Malone was on several months ago with Tucker Carlson. The podcast was immediately taken down from YouTube. And when Dr. Malone was on with Carlson, he went through a whole litany of how all scientific discussion had been censored. And Malone came up, this is 1989 now, so it's what, 10, 12 years before the CIA reports came out. And he was warning people back then that this was the coming thing. And it had to do with the introduction of what he called RNA transfection system using cationic liposomes. And this is what he published in 1989. In 1990, okay, 13 years now before the CIA report came out, he demonstrated that mRNA could deliver genetic information into the cell to produce proteins within living cell tissue.
Hmm. Imagine
this
that.
This is 1989. Okay. Everything about Malone has been removed from Wikipedia and their entry on mRNA vaccines. The person who Wikipedia is now crediting with the development and the creation of mRNA vaccines is the researcher who works for BioNTech, which is the German subsidiary of Pfizer. It is BioNTech who is manufacturing all of the Pfizer vaccine. To Dr. Karika. Okay? So all of this history is being manipulated, which is very strange, because the original discovery of mRNA drug delivery, okay, is accredited to the researchers at the Salk Institute in the University of California in Los Angeles. Very interesting. You know, you keep looking it up. So the Hungarian biochemist, Katalin Karikó, is all of a sudden being praised now by the media as the inventor of mRNA vaccines, which is absolutely false. It started with Dr. Malone back in 1989. Karikó is the senior vice president of BioNTech. And they're the guys in Germany who created Pfizer's vaccine. Very interesting. Karikó,
like,
by the way...
Well, it's a stupid idea.
In Hungary, when it was under the Soviets, he was also a police informant, which lends a little interest to the whole thing.
So it sounds like Pfizer had a little head start on the
leg up, as they
technology
say.
On the vaccine.
Mr. Friedman, let's take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back with you. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Party in the CIA. Need a country to stabilize. Look no further, we're your guy. We're your guy. We got snazzy suits and ties. Suits and ties. And a better dental plan than the FBI. Better put your hands up and get in the van, or else you'll get blown away. Brainwashing moles like it. We only torture the folks we don't like. You're probably gonna be okay.
You're gonna be okay.
Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. No, we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
I would play that on every break if I could. It's like my favorite song. It seems to go with every topic, too. All right, back to you, Mr. Friedman. What other bad news do you have for us?
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, there's some true factor of truth or whatever, you know. It's not the Snopes people, but it's that kind of an idea that says that guy didn't invent the thing in 1989, that's false. And I'm like, good Lord, we're going to have everything on paper, and we're going to have to crawl back through the archives and see, because everything online, I mean, you don't know. Is this actual truth, or is this just their truth, or is it sanitized history?
It's all being sanitized right now. So Malone was on with Tucker Carlson on Fox on June 24th. That's just last month. Mm-hmm. And he was interviewed by Tucker. And what's really weird is I cannot any longer find the interview. So
it's just an accident. Just a little mistake.
It
fell off the server.
Yeah, it just accidentally disappeared from the internet. What the heck?
Well, he can do that. So what he said, amongst other things, was a significant part of why we don't have adequate data is because the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, purposefully decided not to require stringent post-vaccination data collection and evaluation. Hmm. So now I went on the CDC's website and the FDA's website, and the implication that they decided that they didn't need to do that is there. I mean, they freely admit it because they know that, you know, 95% at least of everybody in this country, they're not going to go do any of this research. You know, they're just going to watch the mainstream media, and that's the end of it. So one of the other things that Malone pointed out was that no risk-benefit analyses have been done by the NIH, by the NIAID, by anybody over here in the United States. So he has now basically concluded that the COVID-19 vaccinations could be the most dangerous medical product we've ever seen. And here is why. The CDC, right on their website, the CDC reported rate of death from COVID-19 shots, people taking the vaccines, now exceeds the reported death rate of more than 70 vaccines combined over the last 30 years. They're reporting that over 11,000 people have died just from the vaccine. That's on the VAERS program website.
And that, by their own admission, is what, 1% of what is reported goes on VAERS?
Yeah. Well, it's like there's only 11 million illegals in the United States. They've been saying this for the last 30 years.
You're right.
It's a constant.
Okay, so they're all sterile, and they're not producing more offspring. Yeah, okay.
No.
I have a bridge I'd like to send you. Okay. The vaccine, therefore, based on the reported death rate from taking the vaccine, is almost 500 times deadlier than the seasonal flu vaccine. These COVID vaccine shots are 7 times more dangerous, based on this report, than the pandemic H1N1 vaccine, which only had a 25 death per million severe side effect rate. So when they did a peer review risk benefit analysis, which was published in the medical journal Vaccines, essentially the same day Malone spoke to Tucker Carlson back on June 24th, it revealed that the number needed to vaccinate to prevent one COVID death using the Pfizer vaccine is somewhere between 9,000 and 50,000. So to put that in perspective, because I love numbers, for every 3 COVID-19 deaths prevented, 2 are killed by the vaccine. You got that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a drug put on the market that has had this level of serious side effects that they've allowed to, you know, continue being administered, do you know of?
Yes, the only one that comes close is thalidomide.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, well, nothing bad happened there.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, not if you want three arms and two heads.
That are real short.
That are real short. So this is
terrifying.
One of the reasons. Yeah, Dr. Malone now is persona non grata anywhere. And you will not find him essentially anywhere. I haven't looked on Wikipedia under his name this morning yet, but, you know, I'm assuming that he is gone. Okay, so let's talk about the safety of these vaccines again, okay? And we're talking about the Moderna biological software with, you know, injected apps and Pfizer coming out of Germany, which scares the hell out of me anyway. So what you're dealing with is the number needed to vaccinate to prevent one death. Well, hardly anybody anymore is dying from COVID. We've got that all figured out. So how many people do you have to vaccinate to stop one death?
Well,
that's a very difficult number to come up with.
But
how do you tell?
The thing that we can't forget to mention is you used exactly the right wording. They're dying from, but the problem is the statistics are counting died with, and they're not not differentiating between the two. So first off, it was people were dying. That was the statistic. Then it was tested positive for, which told me there was some funny business going on because who cares who tests positive? I mean, if they're not sick, who cares? And then, dying with, well, I don't care. They probably died with psoriasis, too, but that doesn't mean psoriasis killed them. So we should be, and the fact that we had, I mean, I can hear somebody screaming in the background out there in the world that, and there was no seasonal flu. And, of course, you know, it's because we all wore masks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so knock off, out of the 600,000 deaths in America, knock off at least 250,000, 300,000, close to half of them, who actually died from the seasonal flu, but they called it COVID.
Mm-hmm. Or they had, there were people who, had lead poisoning, you know, they had gunshot wounds. I mean, technically they died from lead poisoning, but they wound up with COVID on their...
Yeah.
Couldn't resist.
Well, they tested positive in autopsy.
So it's like, wait a second. What exactly, you know, and to just make... thing that's interesting is, you know, when you have a crisis, I think about George Washington, you know, at Valley Forge. Two things you didn't talk about, the food and the weather, right? Those were like off limits. Yeah. Okay, men, we don't talk about the food or the weather. Anything else is on the table.
There you go.
So
that's
here,
very
you,
funny
you, here you have a, you know, a crisis, a nationwide crisis, and all you do is talk about it all day long and be afraid, 24/7. And I mean, that's not even healthy, actually, even if you should be afraid. So on the flip side, if being afraid would actually help you, thinking about that the whole time isn't how you save yourself. I mean, they don't teach the military that. Go into a combat situation and be afraid of getting shot. That's what you should think about all the time. It's like, no, you don't. You're worthless then.
This is very true.
Stuff frustrates me.
Matter of fact, there's an interesting study that was done by a colonel that I know who wrote a book called On Killing. And you can find it. It's out there. And it's very interesting because with all the research he did, he discovered that in Vietnam, for example, our guys, for every North Vietnamese or VC that was killed in Vietnam, we expended something like 50,000 rounds because a lot of our guys were over there and kept shooting in the air. And he went back and started to research in Korea and World War II. And he discovered that the same problem existed in both Korea and World War II. that our guys were over there, and they would have somebody in their sights, and they would shoot over their heads, trying to convince them to go away or to surrender, rather than to take them out.
That's not a good strategy.
No, it's not a good strategy, and it rolls into all of this nonsense about defunding the police and everything else. Let me tell you something.
Having spent my time in the leg.
In uniform, I didn't want to shoot anybody. I would do anything not to. Okay? I take additional risks just not to have to go to that extent. Because, first of all, the paperwork is horrendous afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got to go through counseling, you've got to go through internal affairs, you've got to have a psych eval. You know, man, I'll tell you something, cops will do almost anything, even put themselves at risk, not to have to use lethal force. Because it's just, it's not in their nature. It's not even in human nature. So, I mean, all of this stuff is just baloney coming out. Anyway, going back to this, if we have another minute or so.
Yeah, we have two.
Good. The efficacy rates for COVID vaccines are merely the reduction in probability of requiring hospitalizations. Thus, the vaccines likely reduce your suffering if you do catch COVID. And I keep coming back to Zycam, the older over-the-counter, you know, Zycam if you get a cold. And then there's Tamiflu, all right? Tamiflu by Gilead Sciences down here in the Bay Area. You know, Tamiflu reduces the severity of the flu if you get it. Zycam reduces the severity of a cold, and it makes it a lot shorter, and you get over it quicker. That is the actual researched and reported efficacy of these vaccines. That's why they keep talking about having to come up with booster shots now.
Right.
Okay? It has nothing to do with variants. It has to do with the fact that your body will slough off the spike proteins that have been put into your body by the vaccine to theoretically shorten and lessen the severity of COVID if you catch it. It does not prevent it. Okay? You get no lifelong immunity from it. They shouldn't even bother calling it a vaccine because it really isn't. It's a biological software. So, how much time we got going here now?
Well, a few seconds, like 10. So we'll come back after the top of the hour. And we will chat more with our guest, Peter Friedman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.